Okay, we're going to finish off the laws of Purim today. We ended off last time talking about how important it is to drink more than usual on Purim, with the caveat that only if that does not take you away from proper behavior as a Jew and as a human being, not to make a fool out of yourself, not to miss on any davening or miss on saying a blessing. You don't want it to lead you into going down. We want it to lead you to going up. Another way of thinking about it is there's the norm, there's the mean of normal behavior. Then there's something called stupidity. And then there's something called craziness. Crazy could be wonderful. Stupid is just stupid. Right? You can go beneath the mean, you can go above the mean. Right? The drinking on Purim is meant to take you above the mean. If you know it's going to take you beneath the mean, just stay sober. Do everybody a favor. Your future job prospects will thank you. Your future shidduch prospects will thank you. Your future children will thank you. Everybody will thank you. Okay. We're holding Se'if Zayin, chapter 142, Simen Kuf Mem Beis, subsection 7. Ha'avel afilu techshiva chai v'matonis levyonim gam l'shleach manis l're'eum. Someone who is in mourning, even if it's the middle of the Shiva, first week of mourning, still is obligated in the mitzvah of giving charity to the poor and also sending gifts of food on Purim. Nevertheless, when he sends the mishloach manot package of food, he should not send something that brings joy. In other words, probably referring to alcohol. Send, you know, sober foods, nothing terribly exciting, something very simple, very basic. However, if somebody is in mourning, that you should not be sending them any gifts of food for the 12 months that they're in mourning. And even if it's something very modest that doesn't make them terribly joyful, we don't give gifts at all to someone who's in mourning. It's part of their practice of grieving is that they don't experience things that would normally bring a smile to their face, brighten up their day. Ooh, someone sent me a birthday present. You know, it usually cheers you up, and during the year, all these kinds of expressions and experiences of joy are muted or eliminated. Imhu ani, if the person in mourning is a pauper, mutar lishleach le'mayis ha'shadav she'en eshal simcha. The exception would be that if he's poor, then you are allowed to send him money, or other items that are not items that bring joy, I guess more than the bare necessities. Bare necessities are always going to be okay to share with someone in need. Don't overdo it with something extravagant that will make them say, "Wow, that was amazing!" You know, it's just keep it to the bare minimum necessities. If you live in a city, let's say, suppose you're in a place, it's an interesting hypothetical. There's nobody there except you and this mourner. And only two Jews in town. Maybe you live in Stratford. Well, Stratford has more than two Jews. Maybe you live in Brantford. Right? And the only other Jew in town is mourning for a loved one that year. So then you have no choice. You must send him a shloch manot, even though we said before you shouldn't. The Elkai mitzvah shalach manot is because you have to have a way of fulfilling the mitzvah, and if it comes at the expense of his grief and mourning, so be it. That would be the exception to the rule. A very interesting exception.
Can a mourning person send shalach
manot? Yeah. Yeah, a mourning person needs to send. He's obligated to send. But earlier we said that we shouldn't send to him. The exception would be either he's a pauper or he's the only other Jew in town. So, you know, Jew number one has got to send to someone.
Can you do burials on Purim or no?
Sorry?
Do you do burials on Purim?
Burials?
Yeah.
I think so. And usually we are. You could do a burial on Chag even. I'm sure you could do a burial on Purim. Yeah. If someone passed away then and needed to be buried, we usually. The only time we don't do this is Shabbos. I mean, most of the time nowadays it doesn't really happen that we bury somebody on Chag, but technically there's no issue.
Is there, yeah?
No. I mean, you can't really get in a car and such, so it's technically in our modern setups, where yeah. Cemeteries are usually far from where we live, doesn't usually happen. But
right.
Based just on pure halacha, you can go through whatever you need to do to bury. Burial itself isn't a problem. You can't get in a car and tractors, yeah, whatever. So modern way we do things usually becomes complicated. But anyway. Ches, number 8. Ein lases malacha by Purim. A person should not do work on Purim. Mish oisem by malacha in Yeroyim, may oisem malacha zim brach leilam. So it's not quite Chag, right? It's not Shabbat. It's not Yom Tov. It's not prohibited to work on Purim. However, it's not appropriate. That's sort of the fine line here. And if you do work that day, you're not going to see blessing forever from that work. So just better just take the day off. Work done for you by a non-Jewish person is okay. Mutter lasik with pragmatia, and you're allowed to engage. Pragmatia, I think, usually means just buying and selling. So I'm not sure. We would have to look up in the big Shulchan Aruch what he's discouraging and what he's allowing. You're allowed to write even a letter that's just for keeping in touch, communication. Not necessarily a letter of great urgency to the point, right? Just send someone a text. Once upon a time, it was called an Igeres Shalom. Hi, how are you? How's the family? Weather here is cold and dreary. Hope it's nice by you. Love. You know. We actually just, Shabbos was my grandfather's yard site, so my grandmother pulled out a bunch of his old postcards that he wrote home from when he was in yeshiva. Because he left home at a very young age to go to yeshiva. And there were incredible letters. One was my great uncle ratting out his brother, my grandfather, saying, Dear Dad, Jerry skips when he davens. Love, Marvin. That was the whole postcard. I had to let you know that my 9-year-old brother is davening way too fast. It was very cute. So Amichtav Shalom, Geres Shalom, just to say hello, just to keep in touch, you're allowed to write that on Purim. So too, you're allowed to write to keep account of your bills. And anything that does not require tremendous exertion or diligence or a lot of thought, you can engage in that on Purim as well. Obviously, certainly it's okay, permissible, to write anything for a purpose of a mitzvah. So certainly to write a check, for example, on Purim is absolutely not even a shred of any issue whatsoever. Again, it's not Chag, but it is Purim. So we're discouraging, don't treat it as a regular day. You know, and maybe you could compare it in some ways to Chol HaMoed, the intermediate days of Pesach and Sukkot, where ostensibly on the starting point of it, Aaron and I have been learning a lot about this, you know, there is a ban on work. However, if in this scenario you could do some work, and in that scenario you could do some work, so it's one of these areas where it's sometimes a little bit of a gray area, and it does depend on the circumstance, and there's a general sort of spirit of discouragement of don't work, unless you really have to, or somebody really needs something from you, or you're going to lose a lot of money if you don't. But starting point is don't. And then the exemptions are somewhat open, as opposed to a regular day where you don't need an exemption, go work. It's kind of like that over here as well. And if it's something that has to do for the purpose, for the sake of Purim itself, you can do a bona fide malacha that would normally be forbidden on Shabbos or Yom Tov, for example, lighting a fire, bona fide malacha, but you can light a fire on Purim, especially if it's for the purpose of Purim. You need to light a fire to cook something for the Purim meal, by all means, go right ahead. So again, it's not to confuse this with the status of Shabbos or Chag, but there's a general discouragement. Don't treat it like a regular day. Try to disassociate from work as much as you can, and you know, be more attentive, be more focused on the day, on the spirit of the day, the message of the day. Again, in the halachas of Chol HaMoed, it basically brings up this idea over and over that the more you work, the less aware you are of the sanctity and the joy of the holiday. So the work that you do will take you away from the mindset of today's a special day, today's a holy day, today's a powerful day, today's a day to tap into the energy and really connect to it and absorb it and engage with it and live with it. So try not to distract yourself from that good work. Give me a cup of water. Thank you. Tess, number 9. Yom Chamisha Asar Ba'Adar Nikra Etzleinu Shushan Purim. The 15th day of Adar is referred to by us meaning everybody not living in a walled city, as Shushan Purim. Thank you. Why is it called Shushan Purim? Because on that day, in the city of Shushan, capital city of Persia, what's it called today? Anybody know? What's modern day Shushan? Is it still called Shushan?
Morocco.
Oh, the city?
Yeah.
So.
Philadelphia.
So, on that day, Esther, huh?
It's called Shush.
Yeah. Really? Nice. Yeah. Sure. Persia. So on that day, Esther asked Ahasuerus for permission that whatever they did around the empire on the day of Purim, the 14th, should be allowed to continue in Shushan on the 15th of Adar. So Ahasuerus said, sure. So the Jews attacked their enemies in Shushan as well, killed a few more hundred people. So it was an extension of the salvation, the overturning of the decree in the city of Shushan. So it's still a form of a minor holiday. In Omrim by Tachnun, so we don't say any of the penitentiary prayers, the forgiveness prayers, the confessional prayers. We don't recite on that day. And usually in shuls, it's like a reverse joy. Technically, because it's a special day, therefore we don't say Tachnun. The experience that most Jews have now is, oh, we don't say Tachnun today? So the fact that you don't say Tachnun is what causes you to be happy. It's like a great joy. We have a few pages less of davening, and it's like, yes, that's so exciting. Let's not pretend it's not there. It is. Every time there's a chazan and shul. Oh, really? We don't say Tachnun today? Nice. It's a great joy. So originally, you know, it started because it's a day of great joy. And it's a special day, and it's a holy day. We don't say Tachnun now. It's kind of reverse engineered. Either way, we're happy. The bottom line is, you're happy, and you don't say Tachnun. Whichever one comes first is not so important. We also don't add, Kelar Chapayim is the additional few paragraphs before the Torah reading that we say on Mondays and Thursdays. So if it would be a Monday and Thursday, we don't say that on Shushan Purim, which it's not this year. It's on a Wednesday. As well, chapter 20 of Tehillim, which we say after Ashrei, before Avodah Tzion, on a regular morning in the morning prayer, we don't say that as well anytime we don't say Tachnun. But also Gamkin Behesped V'Tanis, just like Purim, Shushan Purim is also a day where you're not allowed to eulogize people. So if somebody's having a funeral that day, we don't make the funeral more somber and sad by eulogizing them. Eulogies usually have the effect of bringing out people's emotions about the person, and it increases people's grief, and it's kind of the point to really feel the loss. But being that it's a special day, we don't want to really feel the loss of the person. We don't want to intensify our sadness, so there's no eulogies. And there's also no fasting. You cannot undertake a voluntary fast on Shushan Purim. Why would you undertake a voluntary fast? Various reasons. Sometimes people will do that for personal teshuvah. Sometimes they'll do it as part of dealing with a terrible nightmare. It's called a tainus chalom, a fast for a bad dream. And other reasons why people might undertake personal fast days, but you're not allowed to do that on a day like Shushan Purim. Various other holidays, big and small, major and minor, you can't undertake personal fast days. So Shushan Purim is one of those. In case you were planning a personal fast day, beware, you can only do it the day after Shushan Purim. And the custom is, we have a little bit of partying and revelry. We do not recite the Al-Hanisim, the special Purim prayer we add in the Amida during Purim. We do not recite that on Shushan Purim if you are not in a city that is celebrating Shushan Purim as Purim. Because if you live in a city that was surrounded by walls from the times of Yehoshua fame, then your Purim is actually Shushan Purim. So the regular day of Purim is just Erev Purim for you. You're just baking Hamadashim. And your Purim actually is the next day, which is for all of us outside of such cities, just post-Purim, Shushan Purim. So for example, in the old city of Jerusalem, or most of Jerusalem, Shushan Purim is the day of Purim. So if you're in Israel for Purim, you actually can get a 48-hour Purim. You arrange your locations right. You spend the first day of Purim, the regular day of Purim, outside Jerusalem. I think there might be, I think Tveria also.
Yeah,
Tveria also is, right?
Yeah.
Also considered a city that's walled. I don't know if any of the other ancient cities are. But you make sure, like, you know, go to, I don't know, Tel Aviv, Bnei Brak, Ranana, whatever, Haifa, Meron, pick a city that was not walled back in the day, and you spend your first day of Purim there, and you do a full Purim. Then you make your way to Yerushalayim, or Tveria. Well, I think there's a much bigger Purim party scene in Yerushalayim than in Tveria. Tveria is a pretty sleepy town. And then you have another day of Purim. So you get 48 hours of actual Purim. And for the kids in Jerusalem that are allowed to smoke at the age of 11 because it's Purim, they really live it up. What's that?
What about something like Yericho? Not that anyone's really celebrating Purim there that much, but it was walled at the time of Yoshua.
For a little bit, right?
Just
yeah.
As Yoshua approached, it was walled.
Yeah.
It's a good question. Maybe.
Wait,
maybe.
And you must celebrate the second day if you do that?
That's, if you live in Yerushalayim, that's your Purim.
No, I mean if you
oh,
all the Purim.
No, that's just you being a Purim tourist. No, you've done your mitzvahs already. Okay. You don't have to hear the Megillah again. It's just for the fun. No, it's just for the fun. Like, you don't have to hear Megillah twice. You don't have to give Mishloach Manot again. Like, I mean, you could give Tzedakah again. There's always a good idea. But you have no obligations halachically of observing Purim. It's just to be, you know, 48 hours of Purim. I mean, that's insane. I did it 1 year. 1 year I was in Purim. Israel for Purim. Amazing. Blew my mind. 48 hours of Purim.
Wow.
It's incredible bonus. Like, what is this? It's amazing. Highly recommended. Mutarin lasas by nisuin, you're allowed to get married on Shushan Purim. Kivan she'ein anu kairin bayas ha-Megillah, because we're not reading the Megillah that day. Did we say before that you can't get married on Purim? I don't remember.
It says it in the next sentence.
Well, that's the implication here.
No, but the next.
Ah, thank you. However, on the day when Megillah is read, Sha'az Ikra Simcha, which is the main locus of our joy, is the Megillah reading. Ein Oisin Nisuim, we are not allowed to conduct weddings on that day. We're not allowed to mix one joy with another joy. We have to give each joy its proper due. You know, it's like, imagine you're, at your wedding, God willing, someone comes in and says, "Oh, congratulations! We're concluding a new Sefer Torah now. So everybody, let's make a nice table in the middle of the dance floor, and it's such a great, exciting moment for our community. We're gonna have a brand new Sefer. Like, it's a wedding. What are you doing? Right? So the idea of not mixing two joys, two simchas together." It's an old principle, and it would mean that there's no weddings on Purim. Practically speaking, it's also, you know, great policy because, I mean, you would lose a lot of friends if you scheduled your wedding on Purim. Like, really? Is that the only day? Did you have to? Anyway, so yeah, no weddings on Purim, but you could get married on Shushan Purim, which is also questionable. I mean,
yeah.
Go ahead if that's what works for you, but like, people are going to be in heavy recovery mode and staggering into your wedding. But I guess if that's the date that works, that's the date that works. Final Seif Yud. Yoim Arba Asar V'Chemish Asar Shav Adar Rishon. In a leap year, when we have 2 months of Adar, so in the first Adar, which is the added month, so on the 14th and 15th of that month of Adar, which would, if it was a regular year, or if it was the second Adar, that would be Purim. We call it Purim Katan and Shushan Purim Katan, minor Purim and minor Shushan Purim. So on those days in a leap year, which this is not a leap year, last year was, Umincha Shelefneim, as well as, this, what we're going to say applies to the days of the 14th and 15th of the first Adar, as well as the Mincha before, so the Mincha on the 13th of Adar. We say the same minor form of joy, of not saying tachnun, the confessional prayers, we don't say on those days as well, even though it's not actually Purim, right? It's just the same date of the calendar where it would have been Purim, but still a minor holiday, in a way, minor Purim, or mini Purim. And again, there's no eulogies and no voluntary fasting on those days. And on the 14th day of the first Adar in a leap year, custom is to make some kind of special addition to your meals and, you know, mark the fact that today is Shushan Purim. I mean, today is Purim Katan, minor or miniature Purim. Okay, with this we have concluded the laws of Purim. So in order to make sure that we're totally up to speed and ready for Purim, I'd like to challenge our listeners and our participants live to a short pop quiz. Let's see what happens.
In order?
Open book. Yeah, open book. It's not trying to get you. I'm just trying to make sure that we remember, and myself also. You got to review. The Gemara speaks about how it was very common for people to review their studies tens of times. At one place I remember seeing that they would review 60 times, another place 100 times. Learning once is nothing. Learning once is just like a first date. It's like, hello, how are you? And do you want to go on a second date or not? Like, you don't decide to marry someone, usually, after one date. Rabbi, my mother, yeah, I know there's the exceptions. I know. But most people, they need a few dates to make that decision. Learning things once is like a first date. We need to go out again and again and again. Really get to know you. Okay. What is the basis for the fast of Esther? Yeah.
Esther fasted?
Yeah.
For this, so the Jews would be saved?
Not quite.
Oh. Did they fast to fight Amalek? Related?
Close.
Esther fast to fight Amalek?
Esther was not involved. It's a total red herring that it's called the fast of Esther.
They ask for good. Usually when you go to fight an enemy, you fast.
Mm-hmm.
And so you ask
Jews. For
Jews.
Yeah. Yes. Most everybody else loads up on carbs.
Yes.
right.
And so to ask for confession, and so that happens to be on the 13th of Adar, the day before Purim.
Right.
And that's why we fast.
Right. So the 13th day was the day they actually fought back. Okay. So there's a decree of annihilation that was never rescinded. That's the whole story of Purim, is that the decree, Achashverosh told Esther and Mordechai, I can't undo a decree. Whatever the king says must go on. What I can do is, I can give a new decree that grants you the power to fight back. I can authorize you to fight back and give you whatever permission and support you need to fight back. So that was the miracle. He said, okay, here, you can fight back. And they fought back on the 13th day, which was the date that Haman had set. This is going to be the we just had now this attempt on a day of hate, a day of annihilation, God forbid. The Jews fought back on that. V'na'afochu, the day that was supposed to be the day that they were annihilated, was the day that they fought back and knocked out their enemies. So they fasted that day because they needed Hashem's mercy. And so we fast that day as well. They rested on the 14th day that became the day of Purim, the day that the war was over and they were just celebrating the victories. That's what Jews do. You fast, you pray, you blow the shofar, you do tshuva, and then you go slaughter your enemies.
Doesn't seem like the smartest plan ever.
We roll a little differently. That's how Jews roll. That's how we roll. Okay. Okay, suppose Purim falls out on a Sunday. 14th of Adar is on a Sunday. That means the 13th of Adar is now on a Shabbat. 13th of Adar is the day you're supposed to fast. Do you fast on Shabbat in that calendar sequence?
No.
So when do we fast?
Friday.
Thursday.
Fast on a Thursday. If that would be the case, we would fast on a Thursday. It happens every now and then. What kind of clothing should you ideally wear to the Megillah reading?
Shabbos clothing?
Shabbos clothing, ideally. Plan B, a really good costume. But if you just show up in your regular clothes, like you're not dressed for Shabbos, you're not doing the plan A, you're not doing plan B, I mean, come on. It's almost like going outside in your boxers. No, I'm kidding. Okay. This was very relevant. We give a special kind of tzedakah on the fast of Esther. Some people do it on Purim, some people do it before Purim. Special kind of tzedakah. What is a special kind of tzedakah? Umaksit ha-shekel, the half shekel. So there was an erroneous statement made in this class that since Canada has no half dollar coin, we must use American currency. However, that was quickly corrected by our astute members, and I'm proud to say that our congregation is now in possession of three Canadian half dollars, and we are putting the American half dollars back where they came from. And we will be using those Canadian half dollars for this special tzedakah, machzit ha-shekel, commemoration of the half shekel that was given during the month of Adar in the times of the Beit HaMikdash. And that would supply the funds for the two daily communal sacrifices that were brought every day to the Beit HaMikdash, the morning and the afternoon sacrifice, which we replace now with Shachrit and Mincha. Okay. How many times must you hear the Megillah on Purim?
Twice.
Twice, correct. At night and at day. One does not replace the other. The two separate elements of the obligation. You have to hear both. Best case scenario for hearing the Megillah is?
Read it yourself.
You all have your own Megillah?
Okay, let's start. It's